Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode... checks. 167 of We Are Going Up. I've got us a little fanfare, David Cameron Walker.
Well, we're back.
Do we deserve it?
No.
No, I don't think we do. Some people said this day would never come, you know. There were lots of people thinking that was it.
They literally have, yeah.
That was it.
We've had emails. We've had emails and tweets thinking that was it.
I've got an email over here. This is from Paul Reeve. Hello, Paul. Fellas, it's all gone a bit quiet, ... Is this the end of Wagyu, or will you be returning so we can have our fortnightly fix of all things Championship?
If and it is, League 1 and League 2.
Well, I was going to say... get them all in, Paul. It's like the new Channel 5 thing with your two shows. The Gold Rush. Hopefully not, but if it is the end, then thanks for the entertainment for the last few years. Well, Paul, fear not. We're back for 2016. A bit belatedly, we've had our winter break. That wasn't exactly scheduled, but it's happened. I'm Mark Crossley in Manchester, Salford Keys to be specific, and David Cameron Walker's in his broom cupboard, I imagine.
I am.
And just
I've
for...
I've never left. I've been here for a month.
They lock you in there, don't they? Just for all the sort of geeks, we're actually, for the first time in a long time, I think we should let people behind the scenes, recording this conversation by a bit of technology called ISDN, which means that it's a lot easier to edit. Now, you might sound slightly more like you are locked up, but that's the price we've got to pay for cutting a few hours off the edit time.
Yeah.
So, we're both here. Plenty going. I mean, that's an understatement. I've printed off everything you've sent me, mate. I've got, you know, got a rainforest of stuff here. Lots been happening since the...
Well, it's a good job somebody's been keeping a check on things, isn't it?
Since the 3rd of December when we did our last proper show. We had the mini episode about Charlton last week. He followed up that... 5-0 defeat with a 6-0 defeat, didn't they?
Yeah.
At the weekend.
I'm not sure whether we've heard yet whether the players are going to... Surely they've got to refund the fans again, haven't they? They did it the previous week with a 5-0 defeat.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you?
They've got to give the fans a bit more money on top.
Exactly. Buy them a meal or something to go on top of it.
Yeah.
So we'll be going through everything that's happened. Well, we haven't got sort of 6 hours, but we'll try and go through as much as we can in terms of what's been happening over the last few months. Now, one of the things that has been happening, DC... it's been the floods, obviously, which have caused big problems, all over Cumbria and Carlisle in particular.
Well, to say the least, yeah.
Those images of the stadium, Brunton Park, underwater recently. So John Coleman is going to come on and talk to us about Carlisle's situation. They've been playing matches all over the shop, haven't they? I think they played some at Ewood Park in Blackburn.
Yep.
And some in Blackpool as well. Mm. So John Coleman, Carlisle United writer for Cumbrian newspapers, is going to come on and talk to us about the situation there, because I think they're pretty much ready to go in terms of returning to Brunton Park. It's been an amazing effort to get everything back to sort of a normal and get the pitch ready to play again. So we'll talk to John a little bit later.
Got through in the cup last night as well.
They did. But we're going to start with another team who got through in the cup on Tuesday night this week, just by the skin of their teeth. They were behind to non-league Eastleigh for the second match in a row. The first game finished in a 1-1 draw. Bolton Wanderers went through by 3-2. However, to say things have gone badly for Bolton this season would be one hell of an understatement. Right, I'm going to find the league table here. Where are we? Bolton Wanderers, bottom of the Championship, played 17 points. They are 7 points adrift of safety because of goal difference, effectively 8 points adrift of safety with just 19 games of the season to go. But that doesn't even begin to describe the problems that Bolton have been having off the field. Obviously, they're looking for a new owner. Eddie Davis is prepared to write off £172 million of debt as they await this new owner. There's a threat of administration. HMRC had threatened them with a winding up order. That was adjourned by the High Court. It will now be on February the 22nd. And today, do you see this? Bolton Wanderers have told the club's staff and players that they may not get paid this month. Around 300 staff based at the Macron Stadium and the two training grounds were informed of the situation this morning. That's Wednesday, the 20th of January, as we record. A failure to sell players or agree to deal to sell the car park between the ground and the Middlebrook retail park is thought to have caused the funding problem. Now, you might remember in November, the players and staff got paid late back then, and it's happened again. And obviously, they're looking to offload players. So, I mean, how do you even begin to sum up this situation?
Well, it's absolutely desperate, especially for the staff. I mean, the players are one thing. You know, players should get paid on time because they're professionals. They've got contracts like the rest of us. But they're probably going to be OK, most of them anyway, certainly the more experienced ones. But those hard-working members of staff, especially in January, of almost, it's never good to not get paid in any month. But in January, just after Christmas, you know, come to the end of January, oh, sorry, guys, you're not going to get paid this month. You know, people got mortgages to pay, kids to feed, and you know, it's a desperate situation. And, you know, hopefully we can have some sort of resolution soon, but it doesn't look great at the moment.
It doesn't. Now, Mark Isles is the man who's been all across this story. He's the chief football writer for the Bolton News, follows the club home and away. And we caught up with Mark earlier and started by asking him about today's developments and his reaction when he heard the news.
Well, I mean, it was quite a surprise, really, because they've been into the High Court on Monday. No mention whatsoever of the fact that they are going to be paying their administration staff a few days later. In fact, actually, quite the opposite, because I think they were being briefed at the time that the impending sale of the car park was going to give everybody a bit of breathing space, and it might not be quite as doom and gloom for, you know, the short-term future, at least. So, yeah, it's a bit of shock, really. Obviously, It's a small town, so news gets around extremely quickly. And you know, once a few of the messages had gone out to the workforce, it was painfully obvious that it came as a shock to them as well. So it was a horrible thing to have to report on, because, you know, you get to know a lot of the people around the club, and you know, it's hit them really hard. I mean, like anybody after Christmas, you know, you're struggling for a few bob, aren't you, after spending over Christmas? And January is a horrible time to not have to wait for your wage or potentially not even get it.
I appreciate that this is something of quite a vast question, because it's a very difficult and complicated situation. But I mean, how on earth did things get to this point where you are having to speak to members of staff who are in tears because they're not getting paid?
Well, I mean, like you say, it's just a vast question, and it'd take hours and hours and hours to pick through the minutiae of what's actually gone wrong. But like any club, if you spend more than you can afford, somewhere down the line it's going to crop you up. Now, with Bolton, you know, I think as a club historically of their size, they were always spending more than they can afford. Even in going back as far as Big Sam and, you know, the Akotchas and the Djorkaeffs. But at that point in time, it's underwritten by Eddie Davis. And at every single point in time along there, no matter what they spent, it was being underwritten by Eddie Davis, and so there wasn't an immediate threat to the future of the football club. It was only when Eddie Davis said, listen, no more, and drew a line under it, that we kind of realised that the financial planning of the football club wasn't good enough. And it's really been the last 12, 15 months where things have started to unravel, and we've kind of started to find out just how badly prepared they were for life after Eddie Davis and when he stopped bankrolling the club. A lot of very poor decisions, and even within that 12 to 15 months, there have been poor financial decisions. It hasn't just been sprung on them. So, no, I mean, it's you know, from a Bolton perspective, it's been a nightmare from start to finish.
And obviously they were in the High Court a couple of days ago. It's been adjourned till the end of February. Do you know any more about the situation with regards to getting a new owner? What's the latest on that?
I mean, we're told there are four parties in the process at the moment. That's another thing that came out in the court the other day to kind of be confirmed. It's difficult because I think all along the process with these things, you tend to have buyers are excited. They think they're closer than they are, and it's a bit of game playing and brinkmanship, and, you know, the club want an extra £5 here and an extra £10 there. So it's all been very difficult to ascertain how long it's going to take. But realistically, I think if they go back to the High Court on the 22nd of February, having not paid their staff and having not progressed anywhere with a buyer, then they really are in trouble. So I would like to believe that Trevor Birch, you know, he's in capable hands. He's been there and got the T-shirt as far as clubs in financial peril go, I would like to believe that by that point in time they would have a new owner lined up, or at least be in a position to tell the court that they would do in the short-term future.
And is your understanding that HMRC were actually willing to wind the club up? It's only because the judge stepped in to stop it, because they seem to be pursuing football clubs a bit harder now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think historically football clubs have reached for administration rather too easily, just to wipe out bad debt. And HMRC have been bottom of the pile in a couple of those cases as well. So they've lost money. It's a bit of a strange one, really, when you consider how much money football pumps into the tax system, I suppose, when you think about it, with the tax bracket that the players are out on, and just the general game in general, I suppose, just in being a massive spectator sport as well. But they were in a position where they wanted the club wound up. It was never going to be that way. I don't think anybody, given the assets the Bolton Wanderers have got, would wind them up at this point. But if you can see what's coming down the line, you couldn't rule it out.
How have Neil Lennon and the coaching staff dealt with this situation over the last few months?
I think it's been one of gradual acceptance. I think it, at one point it came as a surprise to Neil and the coaching staff. I think at the point where they were just about to sign Rajiv Van La Parra from Wolves, in fact, and Brett Warburton, the vice chairman, who Phil Gartside, the chairman, had 4-0. And Brett Warburton turned around and said to Neil Lennon, "Look, we've just got no money. Literally got no money. You can't make these signings." So at that point in time, he sort of started asking questions and it slowly started to unravel for him. But the communication has been absolutely terrible. It really has. I mean, I feel very, very sorry for Neil in the respect that he hasn't been kept in the loop for a lot of things. And it's been extremely difficult to coach a football team.
And there's been rumours again about a couple of players in particular this week. Zach Clough and Bristol City, I believe he's turned down that move. And Mark Davis and Sheffield Wednesday. How important is it, I mean, as bad as it's going to sound for Bolton fans, that they do sell players in this window?
Well, we've been back and forth on that one, really. I think when Zach Clough turned down the move to Bristol City, it was largely celebrated because, you know, we didn't want to lose who's probably the jewel in the crown, really, for Bolton at the moment, certainly the one we're pinning our hopes on. It was a big money move and, it would have been a lucrative one for him personally as well. So everybody was happy about that one. Mark Davis was a bit of a convoluted one. I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of why he didn't actually finish his move at Sheffield Wednesday, but I think that's had a knock-on effect with all the staff payments as well. It's just the timing of the move. I think they thought it was over the line. They thought they had that money, and it ended up dissolving. But realistically, at that point in time, we thought, fair enough. If they've got breathing space, maybe we don't need to sell players. Now I think we're back to the beginning again, and the next couple of weeks until the end of the transfer window are going to be fraught.
And what's Eddie Davis sort of had to say for himself throughout this whole episode? Because as it stands, if and when this club gets sold, if it even exists to be sold within the next few weeks, he's gone from a position where once upon a time he was the man that was behind the scenes when Bolton achieved their, greatest successes of the modern era. And now he's going to, legacy is completely and utterly tarnished, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to tell you exactly what his thoughts are, but he doesn't speak to anybody. So that's going to be something that will probably not come out in the wash in the future. I think he keeps his own counsel, always has done. Whether they've been doing well, whether they've been doing poorly, you very, very, very seldom get a word with Eddie Davis. So that's been one of the frustrating things. Obviously, you can't really seek any clarification. The fact that the chairman's gravely ill as well has made it very difficult, really, to find out exactly what had gone on and what's got us into this position in the first place. So it's a lot of directionless anger at the minute at Bolton Wanderers. I feel so sorry for the staff and the people that are being affected by it, and not the least the fans, of course, but the people that are, through no fault of their own, stuck in the middle of this. It must be a terrible situation.
And as for on the field, obviously out of the League Cup to a lower league team, only just got past non-league Eastleigh in the FA Cup, bottom of the Championship, 2 wins from 27 games. I mean, relegation's sort of nailed on, isn't it?
Well, again, you live in hope, don't you, as a football fan, and you certainly do as a football writer, but it's one of those. If a white Knight was to come in on his horse in the next couple of weeks and make everything better again, then you've got 15 games maybe to save your season. Being realistic, I suppose, yes. I think you're looking at League One football. They've got a game against MK Dons this weekend that you think if they win, you know, maybe. But, you know, we've been saying, you know, it can happen for a long time now. So it's getting more and more difficult to make yourself believe that, and you know, in the build-up to a game like this. But it has been done. You know, stranger things have happened in football. So I think we'll carry on, you know, hoping against hope, I suppose.
I think you're right to say that, really, because although on paper it looks like it's almost a certainty and it's not even really the main focus of the club at the moment. There are more important things to be sorting out and the focus is off the pitch, of course. But if they were to get something sorted financially to tide them through and someone comes in to save the club's short-term future at least, all you got to do is, you know, win one match and it's down to 4 points. And then the players that are there and the managers and the coaching staff, you know, that little bit of belief can creep back in. And, you know, if they are going to stay up and do something, stage something of a miraculous escape, the thing that needs to happen is the away form in particular needs to improve, because no wins away from home, 3 draws, 11 defeats, 31 goals conceded and just 9 scored. I mean, the two wins have come at home, obviously, and the rest of the form at home has been bad enough, but away, it's been awful.
It has. I mean, to be fair as well, Neil Lennon came in, the away form has been awful. It's not been a you know, this season thing, or you can't pin it on what's been happening recently. The away form has been terrible since he came in sort of 15-ish months or 14-ish months ago. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, on paper, you look at the form over the last 12 months, see how many wins they've put together, and, you know, one win away from home, Easter Monday, I think it was, last year. It's very, very difficult to convince yourself it can be done. But everything starts somewhere, doesn't it? And, you know, mathematically, there are other clubs struggling at the bottom. You know, there's been, I mean, you look at Charlton and teams like that, and Rotherham, and they've not managed to get away from it that much. And every time you think one win, they start getting set back down again. And, you know, a couple of wins, all of a sudden you believe again. It's not over until it's over, is it? And you know, I think that's a great thing about following the football club, isn't it? It's having that little bit of hope that it might not be bad in the end.
It's the hope that kills you. And Mark, just before you go, one final thing I wanted to ask you about was the Supporters Trust, which has just been set up at the club. A couple of high-profile ex-players involved. There was the meeting at the Macron Stadium a few weeks ago. John McGinley and Kevin Davis, just a couple of the names. Tell us about that, because that's now all been set up and officially formed, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, that really is a little glimmer of hope on the horizon, regardless of what happens to the ownership, whether somebody comes in and buys it in the next couple of weeks or whether or not, you know, the worst should happen. And you're talking about administration or any of those things, I think there is a real chance for the trust to have a say in the future of the football club. And you only had to see, you know, 1,000 people packed into the Macron Stadium for the opening launch night. Now I think they're closing in on 5,000 membership, which is incredible. Especially, you know, on the launch night, we spoke with people from the Pompey Trust, who have been fantastic down there and completely saved that club. Now, the Pompey Trust have only got 2,000 fans. Bolton did that in 24 hours. So the appetite is very, very clearly there with Bolton supporters, and they do believe in this system. It's obviously a rush job at the minute. They're trying to get themselves together. They're trying to rally for support. They've had some fantastic backing from legends like Kev and Super John, and I know we've had messages from people like Gudney Bergson and Stu Holden and Bibby Gardner. You know, people that have kept tabs from around the world on how Bolton are doing, and they too believe that this could be the way forward. So there's a lot of goodwill out there for Bolton. It feels like it's the end of the world at the moment, but it needn't be the case.
Well, let's hope it isn't, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's been an awful few months to report on all this. Hopefully there's some light at the end of the tunnel soon.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. That's Mark Isles, the chief football writer from the Bolton News. And we're going to turn our attention to the situation at Carlisle next.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
So this Saturday, it'll be 49 days since Storm Desmond did its worst, and we saw those terrible scenes in Cumbria and Carlisle. And since then, of course, Carlisle United have been unable to play their home games at Brunton Park. The players helped out in the local community in the aftermath of that storm. However, on Saturday, they're going to be back. The first game since the floods hit, they're going to play York City in League Two at Brunton Park. And they go into that game off the back of a morale-boosting penalty shootout win against Yeovil in the FA Cup, which has set up a fourth-round FA Cup tie against Everton, which is going to have the TV trucks heading down there as well. So a bit of a cash windfall. Let's get a view on the situation that's been happening at Carlisle over the last few months, because a little bit earlier, DC caught up with John Coleman, who we've had on the show before. Now, John is the Carlisle United writer for Cumbrian Newspapers. He is at John Coleman, no H, on Twitter, if you want to follow him. And DC started by asking John about that dramatic FA Cup win against Yeovil, and asked if it was one of the maddest Carlisle games that he's covered.
Yes, probably. I've covered them, I've reported on them for sort of 10 years plus. I've followed them for quite a number of years prior to that as well, and it is a club that's had a lot of sort of wild and crazy nights and days sort of intermittently, but Tuesday would certainly be up there. It was just everything that could have happened and a few other things that you didn't think would happen all happened. To be honest, the first sort of 70 odd minutes of the game were pretty disappointing from Carlisle's point of view. They were a goal down, they weren't playing particularly well, and it was looking like a bit of a damp squib and an exit from the cup. But then they got the equaliser, and then there was the sort of melee in the box, and Djebo Ebere steaming in on the goalkeeper and somehow avoiding a red card. I still can't quite fathom how he managed to get away with the book in there. Then there was the sort of really sort of melodramatic injury time penalty where Zoko, who was a real big favourite at Carlisle, steps up and takes one of the worst penalties you'll ever see. Then two red cards in extra time. The woodwork's been hit two or three times. And then lo and behold, we have the penalty shootout, and the best penalty you'll probably ever see was taken by Mark Ellis to win it. So, yeah, by the time it all finished, everyone's hearts were racing, blood pressure was through the roof. And the outcome, given what's happened in the area of Carlisle and Cumbria, was a really sort of a real bonus and a real sort of fillip for people. So all's well that ends well, but they really do test your nerves.
And Everton up next in the fourth round, and as you just said, a real welcome boost for the fans and for the club, and also for the finances, given the tough month that's just been.
Yeah, I think it's a real sort of pull for people this time now, with Brunton Park having been out of action for such a long time. I mean, the comeback game is this weekend in the league against York, and then very soon after that we've got Everton and their sort of star names coming up here. There should be a good crowd, and financially it's a real boost for the club in terms of the prize money and the TV money they're going to get as well. The timing couldn't really be better for them, and I think it's just gives people, you know, especially supporters sort of in this part of the world, just a real nice focus and a real positive thing to look forward to, and the need sort of all those things they can get at the moment, given what's happened up here.
So tell us how the club, I mean, and the people of Carlisle really have come through the floods and the difficult scenes that we've seen on the news, because it's very easy, I think, for someone like me who lives down in London to kind of take for granted just how difficult this must have been for the people involved in Carlisle United.
Yeah, I think to say how people have come through it, I think it's probably slightly premature. I don't think people can come through it and have got through it by this stage, sort of just really less than 2 months later. It's going to be a long and very hard process for a heck of a lot of people in this part of the world. We've seen some incredible stories and examples of community spirit across Cumbria, really, that's quite inspiring in pretty horrendous times. And Carlisle United has been sort of one sort of small aspect of that, and has certainly played its part in that. The club, you know, especially the players who went out and sort of helped a lot of people on, you know, in the streets near the ground by helping clear the houses of sort of flood damaged things, and you know that it showed that the club and the squad were sort of human beings living in the real world, and showing that they were very aware of what was going on the doorstep, and that went down well. That was a really sort of good sort of symbolic act as well. So in that respect, it's been approached, I think, in the right way. In terms of actually physically getting things back going again. The club have been, they've acted quite quickly. I think this Saturday it'll be just 49 days since the flood struck and they're going to get a game back on there. So they have been working hard in very difficult circumstances. You know, office staff have been sort of scattered across the city. Companies have been lending a hand, doing them favours, allowing them to use office space. They've had porter cabins at the ground. They've had to lay a new pitch entirely in incredibly short space of time, which is a real tribute to how the ground staff and everyone who's helped them has worked as well. They've been playing away from home at grounds in Lancashire, and supporters have had to get 90 plus miles down the road to a home match. And you don't do any of these things, I don't think, without a real sort of spirit and just a willingness just to get on with things as best you can, and to try and put the difficulties on the shelf and to one side as much as you can, and try and get a bit of normality going, even if sort of real full normality is going to be months away, possibly longer for a lot of people.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, you're totally right to say, of course, it's going to take a long time for people's homes, their lives, their businesses to get back to some semblance of normality. But I mean, looking at the team, purely at the football club, how have they been affected in terms of keeping it together with results on the pitch and obviously not playing at Brunton Park?
I think they've done okay. I think it's been a pretty disrupting time for them, albeit it doesn't even compare with how flooding affects people's lives. You know, a football team having to train at a few different places and play a couple of games elsewhere, it's not really on the same level. But I think, you know, it's had a disrupting effect in a sense of losing a couple of games as well over the festive period. You know, one of those was a Carlisle home game. You know, one of them was an away game, so that wasn't really anything to do with the Cumbrian floods. So I think it knocked them out of the stride a little bit. Although they're a pretty sort of grounded squad of players from everything I've seen this season. They've kind of got on with things. You know, results haven't fallen off the cliff by any means. They've, you know, the first game after the flood, the first sort of away home game was at Preston, and they gave Notts County an absolute hiding. So, you know, since then, yeah, the performances probably haven't been as fluent and as flowing as they'd have liked. A couple of the pitches they've played and haven't been sensational either. So there's a bit of mitigation there. But they have got on with it. The club has actually backed them pretty well in the last few days by letting them stay down in the south after the Barnet League game. So they were really down south for 5 days until they got the Yeovil tie done. So that eased a bit of the strain on them in terms of travelling and the tiredness that would bring and stuff. So the football side of things has sort of plodded on pretty well. Keith Curl's a pretty single-minded manager in terms of knowing how he wants to work and how he wants things sort of professionally done and stuff. So I think he's been stressing that as much as he can whilst being conscious of the sort of unique situation that the club and the staff and everything else has been in. So I think that there's a pretty good feeling around the team this season. The sort of upper mid-table chasing the playoffs kind of area in League Two with a couple of games in hand. So there is a feeling that it could still be a pretty special season, and that's aside from the FA Cup run, which has been the best run the club's had for 19 years.
Often when you look at sides that you don't watch week in, week out, you'll look at the top goal scoring charts and for an idea as to who the best players are. Now, Jabo Abire is your top scorer, but that doesn't always tell the true story. So who have been the stars of the show this season?
I think Jabo Abire would still be the first name you would look at, because especially in the early stages of the season when Carlisle were still gelling and they weren't winning games with great regularity, he was almost single-handedly pulling them into games and scoring an incredible number of goals in the first few weeks. So I think in terms of setting the tone for the team's character and its spirit, I think he's still the standout man this season. But you're right, it's certainly not a one-man team, and Ibire's had a period of injury, and there's been periods when other players have really stepped up. The captain, Danny Granger, probably deserves quite a strong mention in this. He had a hard time of it last season. He's a local fella who was signed the summer before last. The team really floundered last season, and he struggled for form, and he copped quite a lot of a lot of criticism, a lot of stick, some justified, some probably a bit overboard. He's shown a lot of character himself this season as captain, as the leader, and just as a player, his performance levels have been excellent. He's one of the best sort of crosses of a ball you'll see at this level. And he's led the team on the pitch, off the pitch, you know, in terms of its community stuff as well. He's been a real star performer for them last few months. He went off at half-time injured on Tuesday night at Yeovil, and he's hoped that that's not going to keep him out for long. It would be a real shame if he was to miss some of these big games coming up. You can also look at one or two of the sort of other experienced figures. They've got Michael Raines at the back. He's a centre-half that's been around a while now, and he sort of knows the level. Mark Ellis, who they've just recently brought in, another really solid, quite experienced defender. And Mark Gillespie, the goalkeeper, who's had a bit of a nightmare with injury over the last couple of seasons, but he's touch wood, managed to string a lot of games together this season, and he's showing a lot of his potential and his quality, and he's probably one to watch over the next two or three years as well. So they've got a good spine, they've got a good core of players, and it's just, I think from a fan's perspective now, it's whether they've just got that little bit of star quality that will get them from where they are now right into the mix of the promotion run, and that's going to be the key over the next few weeks.
Now, you touched on it briefly earlier, but I wanted to ask you about the financial situation at the club, because I've been reading some of your pieces online, and it's quite an interesting picture, really, because there was talk, it seems, unbeknownst to me until recently, some time ago, of a billionaire coming in to Carlisle United to invest in the club. But as yet, that hasn't transpired. And there has been some investment, as you mentioned, in terms of the staying down south for a bit longer. A few players have got new deals. So what's the financial situation now and going forward?
Well, the billionaire has been... I mean, things like this are almost not swept aside, but kind of just put on the shelf a little bit, I think, while the club has been recovering from the floods. And I think that's where supporters' attention and energies have been, and probably rightly so. But yeah, in the background, there's still quite a curious situation going on financially. The billionaire was something that was announced as far back as last May. The club announced that they'd had a genuine and firm, in inverted commas, approach from an investment sort of suitor. This was at a time when another more local investment proposal was being in the process of being rejected by the club. This transpired that it was apparently an overseas billionaire. Now, since then, and we're talking months on, nothing has really materialised on this. It's been a very curious and a little bit embarrassing sort of situation, really, that this thing has been persisted with. It's not been put to bed. It's not really come to any kind of fruition or clarity. So this is going on in the background, along with sort of a more recent kind of investment proposal, which is involving the supporters club and some local businesses. There's not too much flesh on the bones of that yet, but these things are going on in the background. In the meantime, the club is quite heavily in debt to the chairman. Andrew Jenkins has been a director for decades, him and his company are owed 1.8 million according to the last accounts. There's a background there in terms of finances that is a concern, and it's a concern in terms of what's the long-term picture going to be. They've reaped quite a few profits this season in terms of having the big cup tie at Liverpool in the League Cup. They sold a couple of the young players last summer, and obviously this Everton game is going to rake in a bit more as well. So the immediate financial sort of strain has been eased quite a lot by that, but I think the long-term picture is something that concerns supporters. They want to see some real clarity and some real drive in terms of where it's going to be in 2, 3, or 4 years. There's also an idea of a new stadium, which has kind of been on the table for about 5 years now without really going anywhere too. So there are concerns and there are worries, and there's a kind of an overhanging scepticism about where the direction of the club is kind of pointing. But I think that the short term and the immediate focus is very much on the immediate stuff after the floods and just the club getting back on its feet and functioning, which touch wood, they're seeming to do pretty well.
It must be a tricky sort of sell, Carlisle, for investment, because kind of its strengths are also its weaknesses at the same time. It's it's the only club in the area, in the immediate area, which you'd think is a good thing in terms of catchment area and getting support, but it's also quite remote. It's quite far away from the kind of footballing civilization, if you like, and in terms of attracting players to move up there and be in that area as well. So it's kind of a catch-22 situation, I'd imagine.
In a sense, yeah, it perhaps is. It does make you wonder why an overseas billionaire would sort of flip his eyelashes at the club, but that doesn't seem to be as credible as maybe some like to think a few months ago. The more realistic kind of investment proposals and ideas of late seem to have involved very much locally based people, or certainly people with local connections, and that might be a more realistic way for the club to go, rather than just simply pulling in a mega money man from far afield. But you just never know in football these days. I mean, some of the owners, some of the investments you've seen at other clubs that might not be particularly glamorous, you wouldn't have imagined or guessed at, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I don't think Carlisle as a club should do itself down. I think it should accentuate its strengths and its positives, and its kind of assets, as much as it can in terms of attracting that sort of investment, rather than sort of dwelling on its drawbacks, which I think maybe has been done a bit too much maybe over the years. So yeah, I don't think they should rule out anything like that, but I think there also has to be a level of realism in terms of who are the right people to come in and try and drive it forward and just inject a bit of sort of fresh money, fresh energy, and sort of fresh kind of business brains into the place. And it would be reassuring, I think, to get some more colour into that picture in the fullness of time. Once these sort of hard few weeks are kind of just receding into the past a little bit.
John, thanks very much for your time. We wish you well for
no
the rest
problem.
Of the season.
Pleasure.
You're listening to We Are Going Up. We've got the Football League covered.
So that was John Coleman from Cumbrian Newspapers talking to DC a little bit earlier on. And right now, I'm not really sure where to start with this, mate. We've got, the best part of 2 months to discuss. So well, everyone, make yourself a brew, settle in.
Month and a half.
Put your feet up.
December the 3rd was our last show.
Yes, okay. So yeah, best part of 6 weeks. Obviously a lot of games played over those 6 weeks though because of Christmas. Loads has gone on. You've been kind enough to try and compile a little list of us. There's been plenty of managerial changes. And the transfer window is now open as well. Should we start in the Championship?
Why
I think
not?
We should. When we last did a show, Brighton led the way. 2 points clear of Middlesbrough. They've fallen back to fifth since. The top six as we record, Middlesbrough and Hull in the top two positions. Derby, Burnley, Brighton, Sheffield, Wednesday. And the bottom three, Bolton, as we discussed, Charlton and Bristol City. So, DC, I'm going to hand the reins of the podcast over to you right now. What do you want to talk about? Where do you want to start?
Well, let's look at the top, shall we?
Well, that seems the obvious place.
Middlesbrough, they've only moved up one place since we last did a proper show, but they have opened up something of a little gap. Would have been even bigger if they could have managed to avoid defeat to lowly Bristol City at the weekend. But they have got a game in hand on second place Hull, and
yes.
they're currently 2 points ahead, so they could go 5 points clear if they win that game in hand and it stays the same. But I think you never know what you're going to get, do you, from losing playoff finalists the next time round. And I do remember us talking about them at the end of last season and at the start of this. I think we were reasonably confident that they would keep it together and that Karanka would keep improving as a manager, because he's still very inexperienced as a number one manager, lest we forget. And they've still got very good players, and you know, looks like they are the best team in the league at the moment.
Comfortably, I would say. Hull City, as I said, in second. They're looking good. They're one of the relegated sides. Derby and Burnley, both fancy to be up there. Brighton in
some
fifth.
Some little rumbles at Derby.
All right, go on.
Rumbles of discontent, even though they are only third. Well, they're 4 points behind Hull, so that's a small gap that they'll need to close quickly as well. But they lost 3-0, didn't they, at the weekend to Birmingham? And I saw a few of their fans on Twitter after the game.
A couple of blinding goals in that game, by the way.
Yeah, and I just saw a few little murmurs that maybe the experiences of last season and how quickly that all fell apart. Maybe that's coming back to haunt them, and they're wary of it happening again. But I mean, they've spent a lot of money, bought a lot of players in the summer, and no doubt they'll spend more in January as well. So promotion really is the order of the day for them this season. So I can forgive their fans for getting worried already, but you know, there's still plenty of time for them to go up.
James Tarkowski, the Brentford player, refused to play, didn't he, on Friday night against Burnley? Saw that story over the last few days.
Well, it's the whole Warburton trying to get a load of players from Brentford to take up north to Rangers. Tumani Diegaruga is another one, I think, who wants out to go and rejoin his old manager.
What else we got? 15th QPR. They've slipped four places. Jimmy,
well, they've only just won their first game under Hasselbank.
They've lost Charlie Austin as well now to Southampton. £4 million quid. What a steal that is.
Well, it's a good deal for... I think it's a good deal for both sides, really. I mean, QPR will be sad to see him go, but really they're not going to... You know, it'd be very unlikely for them to get up now. If you're going to keep him in the summer like they did, you'd hope that if he stays, you'll shoulder the wages that he may have been on in the hope that he'll get you back up at the first time of asking. That's not going to happen. He was going to leave in the summer anyway. He was out of contract. So someone offering you £4 million quid for him, he gets to go and play in the Premier League. You get £4 million that you can reinvest. I'm sure Jimmy will be glad to use those funds if they're available to him, because it hasn't really hit the ground running. Hasn't really worked for him so far, has it? I saw one of the players saying that he feels that the side lacks an identity and they're not really sure what they're trying to do at the moment, and maybe it's taking a little bit longer than Jimmy would have liked for them to find their feet. But just the whole thing at the club is the whole situation, no matter who is in charge, it still seems to be just as confusing. You've got Chris Ramsay, he's gone back to the club after having been sacked unceremoniously a few weeks ago, and he was on Match of the Day slagging the club off, really.
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks later, they say, oh, come back, Chris, it's all right. We want you as a technical director or whatever his title is. And you've got Les Ferdinand is there as well. Is Warnock still there? Do we know? I mean,
probably.
It's all a bit of a mess, really, isn't it? Who is steering the ship there has been the question for many a year now. Yeah.
They've just signed Connor Washington from Peterborough, though.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm not sure that this is... I think in stark contrast to the Charlie Austin deal, I think this is a much better deal for Peterborough than it is for QPR. Now, this is a player with promise, no doubt about that. He's been on red-hot form in the last few weeks, as Peterborough have improved since Wesley came in. Wesley certainly got the best out of him in recent times. But it's a lot of money for a player who hasn't scored that many goals over the course of his, albeit short, career so far. And it could, I think it's, you know, I'm led to believe that the initial fee is only the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot of add-ons in this contract that could see QPR paying a significant amount of money. I mean, of course, if they pay the add-ons, that means he will have been a success. So fair enough. But I think it's another example of Peterborough getting maximum value for a player who didn't cost them very much at all.
Slavisa Jokanović back in the Championship after getting promoted with Watford last season. He's taken over at Fulham. You were pleased to see him back, I know, obviously.
I was, yeah.
A lot of Fulham fans were pleased to see. Did you have a chant for Jokanović? I'm trying to remember.
We did. Da 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 da. Oi, oi. Da 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 da. Oi, oi. Da 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 da. Slavisa Jokanović.
Yes, I thought I remembered it. Yeah. I was telling my housemate about your Igalo chant as well the other day. He's a big fan of that. Anyway, sorry, off the topic. Jokanović is back at Fulham, but they are loitering above the relegation zone, along
slipped.
With Blackburn, Leeds, and plenty of old Premier League teams.
Well, they've slipped six places since we last spoke. Again, a manager who's not quite got to grips with his new team yet. I think it will take a bit of time. It took a bit of time when he took over from Watford. And interestingly enough, the game where it clicked for him and he never looked back from was a 5-0 thrashing of Fulham at Craven Cottage on a Friday night. He is, as you will have heard me talk about last season, he's a very flexible manager tactically, likes to change things mid-games, changes the formation, brings on substitutions to change the game if he feels that's what needs to happen. Not always the most exciting football. He's pragmatic. I think he does what needs to be done. He looks at the players that he's got and thinks, right, this is the way we need to play to beat this team. These are the players we need to pick to beat this team. Let's play this way this week and another way the next. So it'll be interesting. I think Fulham are a club that, similar to, not quite as badly managed as QPR, certainly haven't hit the headlines as much, but really just as much of a basket case in terms of them being miles off from where they were in the Premier League since they've come down from the Championship. A lot of players have come through that club, a real mixture, and I think there is a real lack of identity, never mind QPR. I think Fulham as well suffer from a real sort of lack of identity in terms of the way they play and the players they've got. So I'll be very interested to see if old Slav can repeat the success he had at Watford. It's a different club, but the one similarity, which I think possibly what swung it for him and what maybe meant that Steve Clarke didn't go there when he nearly did, is that he's going to be the head coach and he's not necessarily going to make the decisions of about recruitment, which a more traditional manager may like to do. And obviously at Watford that was the case and he flourished under that system. So it bodes well for Fulham fans, but so far hasn't quite worked, but we'll see, early days.
Sorry, that was me dropping off my papers on the floor. On Friday, I believe you're going to the United States of America, if I'm not mistaken.
I
remember
again,
you telling
me
that last weekend.
Yeah.
Now, the man you're going with is friend of the show, Sean Thorne, Bristol City fan, last season, absolutely overjoyed with how the Robins were playing. Steve Cottrell, did they get record points? They certainly came close to it, if they didn't, in League One, winning the title. And here we are, this is football, 24, 25 games into the next season, he's gone.
27 games, in fact.
27 games
now,
into the next
season. He's been gone for a few games. But, and of course, I've spoken to Sean about this, and he thinks it's a good decision. I think the fan base is pretty much split in terms of backing him and the others that wanted to sack him. And the sacking side of seemingly won because he's gone. And I think from what Sean was saying to me, there seemed to be an unwillingness on Cotterill's part to change the tactics, to change the team selection, when clearly something needed to happen to arrest their poor form and to get them further up the table and out of the relegation zone. They've slipped back into the bottom three now. They beat Middlesbrough since he's left. A couple of new players came in, or players that hadn't been playing have come in since he's left. So maybe that maybe they were right in what they were saying, that he wasn't flexible enough. But it's strange because they had such a brilliant season last year. He scored so many goals and they played good football and it was a real feel-good place, Ashton Gate. And it's just all evaporated really quickly. Normally we see teams that romp to the League One title like that at least hold their own in the division. And Bristol City were not doing that. And if they're, if they're not careful, they're going to go back down again. So they've done something to try and arrest the decline. And we'll see who comes in there. At the moment, it's John Pemberton Wade Elliott.
Wade Elliott.
Who are the sort of joint caretakers at the moment. Pemberton's kind of the more senior of the two. Has been on the touchline for the FA Cup games against West Brom. The first one in the replay. I watched the replay last night. Terrible game. Really poor game of football. Bristol City had a really good chance to go ahead in the first half. And they missed it. Put the ball wide.
Hey, mate, only one game of football last night mattered. We'll come on to that.
Really in it, apart from that. West Brom weren't much better, but they just got through on the night. But
brought in Ben Gladwin and Alex Pearce on loan in the last couple of days. About yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, they're not bad signings. They're both players that have done okay, haven't they, in recent years? But their moves, certainly Gladwin's to QPR, hasn't worked out in the way he thought it would. But look, Bristol City, they're well in touch. But on Cottrell, it's interesting, I think, because he very much seems to be a manager that does well initially when he comes into clubs, has impacts, and he's got promotions under his belt, a number of promotions under his belt, but never sustained success over a period of 3 or 4, 5 or more seasons. It was a couple of seasons, 18 months here, 2 years there, and then something happens, it goes awry, and he moves on and gets another job. So I'm sure he'll get another job lower down or League One or maybe Championship if he's lucky. He can't quite seem to do it long term, but he's back on the merry-go-round now. I'm sure he'll be getting off again pretty soon.
League One next, then. We'll move down to League One. Burton Albion were top when we did our last show. Burton Albion are top now, but they've got a new manager in charge, except he's the old manager. Say hello to the new old boss. Nigel Clough is back in charge.
Yeah, what do you reckon? Would you think it's a good move for Cloughy Jr.?
Well, they say never go back sometimes, don't they? But I suppose
it's one of the oldest cliches. It doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't.
Yeah, no. Well, obviously they're a slightly smaller club.
If you are going to go back when they're top of the league.
Well, yeah, smaller ambitions than Derby and Sheffield United, sort of less pressure. But I suppose, as you say, top of the league. They're still top of the league. They were 2 points clear when we did our last show. They're 2 points clear now. Swall's going well, I think. Walsall in second.
Can I just interject here?
Please interject, mate.
Before we move down the League One table.
Yeah.
There's a great bit on The Guardian today.
Yeah.
Where, is it called The Knowledge?
Yeah.
The Knowledge? Where they answer like interesting questions.
Yeah.
And one of them was about players who have played for clubs that are on the same train line.
Right.
Because Ian Dowie, some punter noticed that Ian Dowie had played for three clubs on the same, I think it was Hendon, Luton and St Albans.
Okay. Someone's got a little bit too much time in their hands.
Yeah,
but
on the same line. Forgive me if I've got one of those wrong. So they said are there any other players like this? Of course, the people at The Guardian went away and delved into the archives, got the Rothmans out, and found quite a few players who'd done that. But the only managers who have performed that feat is indeed Nigel Clough.
Ah.
Sheffield, Derby and Burton.
Yes.
All on the same line and consecutively as well.
Always knew Cloughy was a train spotter. second place, Walsall. They've got Sean O'Driscoll in charge there.
Yeah,
in a minute.
I think that's quite a good fit.
I actually saw Walsall on Saturday, the day after I saw you for our Friday night, which, by the way, didn't result in bowling at 11 p.m. as you promised on the mini episode last week. Which is a bit of a shame.
Story for another day, that is.
Isn't it just? But yeah, on Saturday, we were 3-0 down at half. Bury were 3-0 down at home to Walsall at half-time. Genuinely one of the worst 45 minutes of football from the point of view of watching my own team that I've ever seen. But fair play to Walsall. They did a job. They hung on in the end to win 3-2. And that's because O'Driscoll's in charge there, because Dean Smith, of course, has gone to Brentford. And he's a man who was at Liverpool at the start of this season, if my mind serves me correctly.
He's been around, hasn't he?
He really has
been around the last couple of years. It's been an unsettling old time for Sean O'Driscoll. He's never stayed in one place for too long.
Could I put him back to Bristol City as a potential shout?
I don't think that will be happening.
Okay.
That certainly wasn't a very happy time. The fans did not take to him there at all, and I don't really think he took to them either. But I think this should be a good fit at Walsall. They're a club that have been very settled under Dean Smith, played some good football. A lot of young players that have come through there in recent years, and those are all things that you'd associate with Sean O'Driscoll, so it should be good, and they're flying high on the table as well. Perfect time for him to take over.
They are. Managerial changes are plenty in this division. As you mentioned, Mark Robbins leaving Scunthorpe. That's what happens if you lose 5-0 to Blackpool. You get the instant sack.
Well, he got sacked after one game last season. So,
yeah. It's an improvement of sorts. Yeah, that's very true. Also down there, Colchester, who've got a new manager, Kevin Keane, has taken charge there. He's previously had caretaker spells at Macclesfield and West Ham, but he's in charge there in the relegation zone. And John Sheridan has gone in at Oldham. David Dunn was sacked, or certainly left the club, and John Sheridan hired from Newport County. And I don't know if you saw this brilliant picture on Twitter on the Wednesday, I think it was. I think he was, basically, the announcement was made on the Thursday. He was presented to the media on the Friday. This is last week, if I remember rightly. And on the Wednesday, there was a picture on Twitter of John Sheridan, the Oldham chairman, Simon Corney, and one of the members of the board, reportedly in Tesco in Oldham.
Fantastic.
Having a meeting.
Meeting in Tesco?
Yeah, and it might be
down one of the aisles.
Well, no. I think it's in like the cost a bit. But of course, there was a bit of...
it's a shame.
It was a bit of...
Meeting when I was 17.
Yeah. Meeting by the fruit and veg. Yeah.
By the fruit and veg. That's busy. That's always at the start. Like, go
where
down
are you meeting,
like
then?
The... I don't know. Like the domestic products aisle or something.
Yeah. Go down that end of the of your local supermarket.
To the pulses.
Yes. There was a story that Newport had reported Oldham to the Football League because they hadn't given permission to John Sheridan to speak to... Oldham at the point he was pictured in Tesco speaking to Oldham. But anyway, he's in
not
charge.
Not the best, is it?
No.
Really? You'd be a bit annoyed if you're a Newport fan.
They've acted quick. They've got Warren Feeney in charge now.
I mean,
we'll come on to them soon.
Newport, one of the smallest clubs around, and I'm sure he's obviously looked at the situation and thought, well, Oldham are bigger.
Well, he's previously
Oldham
manager.
I've been there before. You know, I'd prefer to be there. It's a better job. But I think it leads a bad taste. Whenever you're a manager and you... Because they're the first people to complain, aren't they, when they're sacked after 3 months? So if you leave somewhere after 3 months, I think you've got to go both ways, isn't it?
Yeah, sad to see Martin Ling have to step down as Swindon
it
manager.
Is.
That's happened since
you
we
wonder,
last did the show.
You wonder now whether that will probably be it for him, maybe as a manager. Hopefully not. Maybe he can get himself back to a position where he feels he can take a job on and somebody will be able to have that confidence in him. But he's still involved in the game. He does scouting. He's been doing some youth academy work as well. So I'm sure there's a way for him to still be involved in the game, but maybe not be that main man that you know has to have that pressure on them, which clearly, unfortunately, he struggled to deal with. And it's a shame.
I've got to mention my own team. Well, I kind of already have, actually. I was thinking about it. I mentioned the Walsall game. We've had a really, really poor run. The standard Christmas kind of fall off the wagon stage of the season. And David Flitcroft coming under a little bit of pressure. I think it was 9 defeats in the last 15 before a backs-to-the-wall job away at Bradford in the FA Cup third round. 0-0 in the first game, 0-0 in the second game, over 90 minutes with 10 men.
Who have you got next?
Hung on for penalties, 4-2 victory, Hull City at home in round four.
Not beyond the realms of possibility.
Not beyond the realms of possibility. Yeah. And it could be a sort of season-changing result because we had such a good first few months of the season and we've been so bad.
We've only picked up 3 points since the last episode.
Yeah, is that true?
You are the... Yeah, you had, had 30 points on the 1st of December. You've now got 33.
Yeah. Well, that tells its own story, doesn't it?
You are the division's biggest downward movers.
Good luck with this one.
In that time. And the division's highest upwards trajectory has gone to Barnsley, who were bottom of the league on the 1st of December with 18 points. They're now 17th with 30 points, just 3 points behind you.
And we play them in a couple of weeks' time. I think it's the 7th of February, around that period anyway. Things are... Hopefully that will sort of change our fortunes, that result. But yeah,
Sheffield United going well as well.
They are.
They're now on the cusp of the playoffs, having been mired in mid-table mediocrity before that. They're up five places.
On to League Two then. Next, Plymouth Argyle lead the way, top of the division. Northampton in second. Oxford, the FA Cup sort of giant killers of Swansea, in third. And in the playoffs, Bristol Rovers, Pompey, Aki and Wickham, as things stand.
Do you want me to do my bit where I go through all the teams again and get the music ready?
You can do. I haven't had a chance to get the music. I'll have a look for it while you talk. You just talk away. We'll see if we've got it.
So Bristol Rovers up 6 places into 4th from 10th last time out. They've now got 46 points, going well. And we have other big movers. We've got Wimbledon.
Give it your Tony Blackburn, mate.
Up 4. I can't do Tony Blackburn's voice. Up 4 places into 8th. Carlisle United, the aforementioned Carlisle United, down 4 spots. It has been a tough time. I think we could let them off. It's been a tough old Christmas period for those guys. Leighton Orient, down 3 spots. They've sacked their manager Ian Hendon. The chairman's been banned, hasn't he, for kicking Andy Hessenthal. Ridiculous scenes. Exeter, not had the greatest Christmas either. They're down 3 spots. Luton Town, another team of changed managers. John Steele's gone back to Dagenham. Who have they got? Nathan Jones from Brighton has gone in there. Interesting. We'll talk about that more in a second. And quite a lot of teams in towards the lower reaches of the divisions that have stayed the same, actually. Daggers are still in 22nd. Hartlepool gone down 1 place. Stevenage down 1 place. Teddy Sheringham's not having a great time, is he?
No.
Barnet down 3 places. Barnet up 2 places. I do apologise, Martin Allen. And Yeovil and York City have swapped. Yeovil were bottom, they're now second bottom. York are bottom of the entire Football League.
And there's your big ending. There you go. I think you did that very well.
I won't be expecting the call from the from the chart people soon.
Greg James has got that one sewed up, mate. No offence. Nathan Jones then. Yeah, Brighton and Hove Albion coach. Appointed on a 2.5-year contract and a beat-off competition from David James, apparently. He was linked
with the position. He fancied
the
job, I think, didn't he? Yeah, certainly. Because he is a Luton boy, despite starting his career at Watford.
You had to get that in there, didn't you? What do you make of that appointment then? Sad to see Big John still lose his job.
Well, I think, maybe it just petered out a bit for him. But I think the Luton fans will certainly always hold him in high esteem for the job that he did. Got them back into the league, which is not an easy thing to do. Got them moving again. And now hopefully they can go on under Nathan Jones. But John Steele now goes back to Dagenham and Redbridge. And, you know, that is a club that he had great success at before. And, you know, I think it works. It fits. Sometimes you just have a club where it works and it fits. John Steele and Dagenham and Redbridge is that perfect marriage, I think. And they have all, you know, they've won a couple of games since he's come in. And, you know, I think it's a good fit for them. And Nathan Jones is an interesting appointment for Luton. It's not the Danny Wilson or Steve Cottrell, or someone that has been around the block and loses jobs and goes back in, etc. And you wonder how many times can they keep doing the same trick. It's a new appointment. It's a manager that has been learning his trade for a long time at a club like Brighton under some interesting managers there. He first came in, I think, when Oscar Garcia was there. And he's a man with a growing reputation, and they've taken a punt on him, and it'll be interesting to see if it works. I mean, hopefully it doesn't, of course. But good on them for appointing someone new and giving someone a go.
Absolutely. Now, the thing is, because we're trying to cover such a vast period of time, I keep going on about it, it's only 6 weeks, I suppose, and there's been so much action that I bet there's loads and loads of funny moments and bits and bobs and stupid goals that we've missed out over the last 6 weeks. But I think that was just kind of in summary edition of We Are Going Up to catch up.
It's a few other bits, of any other business.
Oh, go on.
I can
give me some AOB.
Of course, we are in January. The transfer window is open. There has been business already, and I'm sure there'll be more over the next week or so before the window shuts. Let me go through. There's kind of more players leaving, the notable players that are leaving Football League clubs and Championship clubs in particular that catch the eye. At the start of January, Damari Gray left Birmingham City to go to Leicester in the Premier League. £3.7 million, which, if you remember how much money Bournemouth were reportedly offering for the player last January, wasn't it, when they were trying to get out of the Championship, it's a bit of a disappointing sum, isn't it? But he looks good already. He's impressed when he's played for Leicester in that cup game, in particular against Spurs, the 2-2 draw. He looked good. So it's a good move for him, I think. And, well, I mean, he's joined one of the best clubs in the country if we're to go by the league table, which is not something you could have said about Leicester this time last year, that's for sure.
Can I say, by the way, this thought did dawn on me, actually. I might have even mentioned it to you on Friday, is that when we started doing this podcast back in August 2011, could you have imagined that, what are we, I mean, 4.5, 5 years on or whatever it is, because at the time, for sort of newer listeners, when we started, there was sort of four of us who did this regularly every single week. And one of the lads was Jim Knight, and we're still in touch with, Leicester fan. And his side are now top of the Premier League or whatever, joint top. And Watford are, you know, top half or whatever. I know you've had a bit of a dodgy 12th. Couple of weeks, 12th. Yeah. But, I mean, who could have imagined that those two, I mean, a few weeks ago, you were both in the top five, top six of the Premier League.
I know.
Ridiculous.
It's funny how things go, isn't it? Things change. And on that note, Anthony Knockhart is back in the Football League. Having left Leicester to go to Standard Liège, he's back at Brighton. A man who
cheated to get that penalty.
But God bless him for doing so. Because if he hadn't done that, then we would never have had one of the greatest moments in our club's history. So, you know, they say no good can come from diving in football.
Yeah, very much so.
Nick Blackman's gone to Derby.
Yes.
After having a great first half of the season with Reading, Derby have spent £2.5 million on him to try and give them the extra edge they need to get up. Disappointing one for Reading fans, I suppose. They've got Matty Vidra there. He scored a hat-trick in the FA Cup last night against Huddersfield, but I don't think he's been doing that well before that game, really, before that hat-trick.
Wolves are going to struggle to replace Benik Afobe, aren't they?
Well, you'd think so.
They have got
8-9 million quid for him.
Yeah.
So they can reinvest. They've got a lot of good young players there. They actually are one of the biggest improvements as well in the last month in the Championship. They're up five places. Playoffs all of a sudden don't seem out of the question for them. I mean, they'd have to have an exceptional second half of the season, but they are getting better. They've got some money to invest. Because at one stage this season, you looked at it and thought, how long's Jacket got there? You know, big expectations at that club. But when you sell your best players, they lost Sacco in the summer and they've lost the Phobie now, it is always going to be difficult, isn't it?
It is. Have you got any more AOB there?
Yeah, we spoke about Connor Washington, haven't we?
Yeah.
Paul Lambert's been going back to the Norwich well for some players. He signed Elliot Bennett and Simeon Jackson, both players.
Danny Graham on loan from Sunderland today.
Yeah, Danny
as well.
Graham, but he had those two at Norwich and Graham from Sunderland. Graham, the last time he was in the Championship, was top scorer, 24 goals with Watford.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and his career has somewhat meandered since, hasn't it?
Would it be fair to say that the goals have dried up since then?
Yeah, well, when he was at Swansea in the Premier League under Rodgers, he was being pushed to touted for an England spot at one stage, but then he left Swansea really strangely, didn't he? That just before they were on that great League Cup run, they went on to win the competition that season, but he left in January of that year. Did he go to Hull?
Yes.
Was it first Hull,
then Sunderland.
Back and forth between Sunderland on loan and went there again. And it's not been great. He's something of a joke figure now, really. It's a bit of a shame because he was absolutely superb for Watford and for Swansea when he first went there. And in the last 24 hours, Leeds have finally said goodbye to Sam Byram, who has turned down Everton, I think somewhat surprisingly, to join West Ham.
Is it true that Steve Evans, sorry to sort of trivialise the subject,
yeah.
Is it true that Steve Evans had to, because basically Leeds couldn't, the size jacket that he wears or training gear, they couldn't put the initials on that.
Kappa.
They couldn't find a size that big. So he's had to pay for it specially to be done, I think.
Yeah, but in the meantime, he was wearing his Rotherham gear with the badge stitched over.
Is that true?
Well, that's what the report said.
Oh, I hope it's true.
Yeah.
Couple of bits of any other business for me, not really football related, just little things to catch up on. How's the aircon? I think people want to know.
The aircon
is it still broken?
Well, the aircon machine is gone.
Right.
That used to be in the corner of the room.
Right.
That we once famously left on throughout our show.
Yeah.
But it's still quite hot in here, so I don't think much has changed.
Okay, and when you go to America, are you going to be going and watching any soccer in America?
No, because it's out of season, mate, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Of course it is. Oh. That's why all the, you know, when old...
Who's the one that's going there? Someone's
Bex could come back to Europe over the winter. Landon Donovan, etc. Steven Gerrard's on BT every week. Lampard's back getting married.
Yeah. How dare he?
It's summer.
Are you you're going to some more wrestling, aren't you? That's probably what's happening here.
Well, I am, actually, yeah. It's all a bit of a coincidence, really. We were going over there for another reason, because we've basically been offered through a friend who works in Disney World. Do you want to come to Disney World for a week for free in January?
Wow.
We said, sounds quite good. Why not? And then we discovered that the Royal Rumble is on at the same time in the same city. So we thought, why not?
Well, enjoy and don't drink too much. And hopefully there'll be another We Are Going Up to follow. We're hoping it won't be another 6 weeks.
No, it won't be.
How long are you away for? You're away for a week, aren't
you? Just a week.
Okie dokie.
I'm going to be able to watch the Watford game at the weekend at 10 a.m.
Nice. Again,
in the morning.
Are you playing?
We're playing Newcastle at home.
Okay.
And we've lost four in a row now. It's all evaporated very quickly.
Keep the Premier League chat to a minimum, mate.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. Well, I mean, we could be back in the Football League.
I can always turn your fader down like that. I wouldn't. I think I'm going to Oldham away on Saturday if the weather behaves itself, because I know it's not been the best over the last couple of weeks, to say the least. Right, that is pretty much your lot.
One thing you didn't mention about Bury.
Oh, go on.
Didn't they nearly get a winding up order?
And
then you just miraculously paid all the money off.
Yeah, it's a bit murky, that. I'm not really sure.
That question still remains, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It is sort of gradually sort of rising up in the background, as it were. I'm sure something will happen with that at some point, but hopefully not for a long time. We teamed up with audible.co.uk to offer you a free audiobook of your choice. Oh yes, new year, but that still exists. audible.co.uk/goingup. Register there. If you haven't done this yet, you can register for a 1 month free trial. Claim your free audiobook. There's over 150,000 to choose from. And you can keep it whether or not you decide to stay beyond the trial period. So there you go. Go and sign up if you can. audible.co.uk/goingup. Also got the Twitter, which is @WagyuPodcast. And the Facebook page still there, ticking along. Facebook.com/WagyuPodcast.
Have you posted anything on Twitter in the last 6 weeks?
Not really, mate. The Instagram there too. I think the last picture we put on the Instagram was a picture of the aircon unit about 2 months ago.
Excellent.
So that's a nice little advert for that. Maybe we need to up our social media game a little bit. Just a little bit. We have fallen a little bit slack in the last 6 weeks. There was too much going on. There was people moving house. You started a new job. There was Christmas. There was alcohol to be drunk. There was football to watch. A combination of all those factors, I'm saying.
Are you enjoying yourself up there, though? Closer to home.
Are we doing this on air, mate? Yeah.
Do you feel like you've reconnected?
I do a bit, yeah.
To your roots.
Yeah, I do. How about you? How's things down there?
It's great.
Good.
It was great to see you last week.
Yeah, it was. It was very...
A whirlwind 12 hours in Manchester.
It was. A ridiculous 12 hours in Manchester. How were you on your train? I enjoyed the WhatsApp picture that you sent everyone.
Well, I was thinking WhatsApp, not Twitter. I think I didn't post anything, did I?
No.
Christ. Not great.
No, it
not
wasn't.
Great. No.
The least, I mean, if we really want to up our social media game, we could always put that on the wacky Twitter, mate.
No.
Okay, let's leave it. Right, that is it for this week's show. If you do want to contact us, @WagyuPodcast is the Twitter. Please say hello, get in touch, offer us your thoughts. A lot of people did get in touch, actually, the last few weeks saying we should do a Charlton special. Well, we've done it. It's done now. So thank you for that. That is your lot from We Are Going Up.
Tell us what you want us to do, please. Because sometimes it's hard to think. Because we look at the stuff and we think, it's not lazy, but we've said this before. We look at, that manager's been sacked. Oh, let's, that club's struggling. And we kind of, you feel like a sense of deja vu. If there's interesting
special,
things you want to know about,
young
play
tell
special.
Us. Young player special. We've had it on the
get there.
We've had it on the sort of mantelpiece for about a year and a half, ready to go.
Tea lady special.
Yeah, that's true.
That'll happen one day.
It will. It will. We've got a list of ideas we put together about 2 years ago, in which one of them was to go to grounds and interview tea ladies. We've always got that, mate. If times are tough. Right, that is it. Thanks very much for listening this week. Please subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. If you're a new listener, hello, welcome. And we will speak to you, hopefully, in the not-too-distant future. We're thinking week after next for the next edition of We Are Going Up.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We've got the Football League covered.